Like I said, this is our last week of our series called Bad Advice, and if you haven't got to listen, it's been a doozy. I've had family members and other people call me wondering if I've lost my mind. A pastor friend of mine called me this week and said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm fine. I'm just sharing bad advice, you know. Just thought I'd change it up every now and then." But we are in our series, and we're finishing up today, but you can go online, and we have our podcast that you can subscribe to. If you have iTunes, you can listen to any of these. You can also listen to it from our website and download it as an MP3. You can go and watch all of these and enjoy service in that way. So if you want to get caught up, please do. It's been a really impactful series. But today we're going to talk about being dissatisfied. And I got a question for each of you. How many of you, if I told you right now, I'm already giving away Amazon gift cards for $10, but what if I told you I could give you $10,000? How many of you would you say your life would be happier, it would be easier, it would be a little bit more complete if I handed you $10,000 right now? Raise your hand if that's true. Raise your hand. $10,000. If I gave you $10,000, don't lie either. $10,000, okay? Now, $10,000, for some of you, you're like, yeah, $10,000, maybe he really has it, right? No. Others of you are like, $10,000, no, not really, right? Like, you're like me. Like, I remember whenever I was a kid, you know, watching like the Wheel of Fortune or The Price is Right, where people win like $5,000, $10,000, you're like, oh my gosh, that would be so cool, you know what I mean? But then you get to be an adult and you're like, that's not that much money. You know what I mean? You're like, give me the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, Regis Philbin, right? Like, that's what I want. Call me at $1 million, but I cannot go to Florida in hopes of winning $10,000. Sorry, it's not worth my time, right? Gallup poll did a study, and they found that people who made $30,000 a year or less, they said $74,000 a year would make them happy. So people who made $30,000 a year or less, if you told them, what if you could make $74,000 a year? They were like, yes, yes, that would be awesome. Please, how can we make this happen? Because I would be complete. I would be happy. I would be so good, right? You probably remember a time in your life, or it may be right now, where you make $30,000 a year or less, and you're like, wow, $74,000, please and thank you, right? I remember whenever I came out of college and had my first interview for a job in Nebraska, and they talked about $38,000, and I thought, I'm going to be a millionaire, right? I mean, I was like, $38,000, and my dad was like, no, son, you need to go back to the bargaining table, right? Because, I mean, like, that seems like a lot of money, right? When you're young and when you start out married or when you're, like, you know, come out of high school or come out of college, it seems like a lot of money. And $74,000, I mean, there was a time in my life, like, that's baller status in my eyes, right? Now, then they went up a notch, and then they went to people who made $50,000 a year. And people who made $50,000 a year or less, they said that $100,000 a year would make them happy. And they would be complete and they would be good. Now, some of you guys, you may make $50,000 a year in your job, or as a combined income, you may make $50,000 a year in your job. And maybe that's you. Maybe you're going, yeah, $100,000 a year, whew, I'd be good, right? Or if even just one of us made $100,000 a year, like, hey, I'll stay home, I'll be a trophy dad, right? No problem. Like, I've told Kate, like, baby, you keep taking over that bank, because I would be fine just staying at home, you know, just preach. Pastors only work one day a week anyway. You know what I mean? So let's make that happen, right? But $100,000 a year, that would make me happy. Now, some of you who are just maybe a little bit more seasoned, let's call it that, all right? Some of you are like, $100,000 a year ain't that much, right? Man, let me tell you something. By the time you got ballet, you got t-ball, you got gymnastics, you got CrossFit, you got music lessons, you got daycare, you got Social Security, you got taxes, $100,000 ain't going to make it. When I get it in my mortgage and my two car payments, actually $100,000, nope. Call me at like 200. Call me at 500. Call me at a million, right? Because for some of you, that doesn't even seem to be that much, right? Now, here's the thing. I asked you that question, how much? How much would it take for you to be happy? And some of you at 10,000 were like, yes. Some of you are like, I got that in my back pocket right now, right? You go up a little more, and you're like, maybe you're getting a little bit closer, right? But here's the thing. If you notice the trend, because everybody's a little bit different in here depending on what they make, right? Or depending on what they have or their experience. But here's the thing. The answer is always the same. How much would make you happy? How much would complete your life? How much would be good enough for you? And the answer is always the same. It's always this. A little bit more. That's the answer. How much would make you happy? A little bit more. Well, let's take you up a notch. How much would make you happy now? A little bit more. Well, let's go even further. How much? A little bit more. It's usually the answer that we come up with. And in fact, Jesus, he told a parable that captured a man who had the same sort of philosophy and temptation in his life. If we look at the book of Luke 12, this story is here. He said, Jesus told them a story. A rich man had a fertile farm that produced fine crops. And he said to himself, what should I do? I don't have room for all my crops. And then he said, I know. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. Then I'll have room enough to store all my wheat and other goods. And I'll sit back and say to myself, my friend, you have enough stored away for years to come. Now take it easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. The rich man had a great year. It said the harvest was abundant. Now that word abundant, the Greek of that word, means to have enough, right? That means I have plenty, more than I actually need. And the rich man, that's exactly what he has. But he looked at it and he said, well, geez, what am I going to do with this? I've been so blessed. I have so much. Here's what I'll do. I'll tear everything down that I have, and I'll rebuild it to be even bigger so that I can store more, so that I can keep more, so that I can have more. That way, next year, when I have an even better crop and I get even more, what can I do? I'll have room to store more and keep more and have more. And then that's when I'll turn and I'll say, okay, now I have enough for years to come. Now I can be happy. Now I can be satisfied. Now I can have joy in my life. And this is what many of us do, right? Many of us in our own lives, so we think to ourselves, you know, here's what I want. That's all I want. I'm not asking for too much. I'm just thinking, what if we had a little bit more, right? Just a little bit more. I'm not being greedy. I'm not saying I want to be a millionaire or I want a mansion. I'm just talking about a little bit more. And it seems innocent, but it's actually a trap. You know, and it's very common for all of us as we grow up. I remember, again, when Kate and I got married, we got married and we moved into an apartment. And I mean, I went from a dorm room living with Darren Ware to, you know, an apartment with two bedrooms and a woman. I was very happy, right? I was like, hey man, this is great. This is exciting. You know what I mean? Like finally, you know what I mean? I could live here forever, right? And then we moved here and we thought, well, we need a place to be able to do, you know, church things and have people over and stuff. So let's get a house. Let's buy our first house. And then we bought a house, right? And we're like, oh man, this is great. You know, we love having a house. This is perfect, you know, for us. I think it's only like 1,100, 1,200 square feet, you know what I mean? We're like, we're good, you know what I mean? And then we're like, oh, it'd be nice if we finished the basement. Just a little bit more room, just a little bit more room. You know, we got babies on the way and stuff and everything, so just a little bit more room. And then, you finish that basement and everything else, and then, you know, sure enough, my wife, she's a sinner. I'm praying for her. She's like, you know what would be nice? If we had a bigger bathroom. This bathroom is too crammed, you know what I mean? And maybe if we just had a little bit more, you know? Or I remember whenever we first got married, we had a deal, is if we bought a couch, we got a flat screen TV. And I had never had a flat screen TV before. Like in all of my life, I don't know about you, but I grew up with a 30-inch tube TV. Like my parents, they had a 30-inch tube TV they kept alive forever. And it was totally fine. I was totally happy with it, right? But then when we got married, we got a 42-inch flat screen TV. And I thought I just got a movie theater, right? I was like, yes! You know, I was so excited. Now I still have that TV 7 years later, and now I look at that TV and I don't like it, right? I hate that TV. Adam and Sarah came over to my house last night, and we were trying to put a DVD on for the kids, and we were doing input. And it says, you know, HDMI 1, HDMI 2, HDMI 3. And Sarah goes, oh, did you know that they have TVs now where you can rename those as DVD or Xbox? And I was like, my TV don't do that. And Sarah's like, oh, well, ours does. You know, it's 4K, 5K Ultra. It has a brain, you know? And I was like, I kind of want that. You know what I mean? Just maybe just a little bit more, you know? Or now, this is going to get real generational, right? Remember when we got dial-up internet, right? Our teenagers, teens, you will never understand. Every time you got on the computer, you had to hear. And then if your mom was on the phone, everybody had to be off the telephone. So if your mom was on the phone, you're like, Ma, get off the phone. I'm trying to get on AOL. Need to check my Hotmail, right? So we had to listen to it every time, and everybody had to be off the phone. But then what did we do? We got internet through cable. Remember that? We got internet, and we didn't have to listen to the zombies and the aliens talk to us anymore. And we were like, hallelujah, right? We got internet through our cable. But then, you know, what happened, right? It's still not good enough. I have CenturyLink at my house, and I swear it is being run by a gerbil in a cage somewhere here in Troy. And I'm trying to find it because it is so slow, right? It's terrible. It's awful. But what do we want? Just a little bit more. It's like, I'm good, but then I want a little bit more. And it's not even with stuff. It's not just with stuff. We do it with our kids too, right? We do it with our kids. All of us are like, oh man, I can't wait until they crawl. Like, I'm tired of holding this child, right? I just wish they would crawl or be able to sit up on their own. And then you're like, man, I just wish they'd be able to walk. Like, please, just pick yourself up off the ground. You know what I mean? Just walk. You know what I mean? Just like, no, I cannot wait until they could talk. Like, I would be so satisfied if they would talk. And then you're like, my goodness, I just wish they would shut up. Like, seriously, I just wish they should stop asking me why. Cannot tell you why, you know? I just wish they would stop pooping their pants, right? Poop in the toilet. And you're like, why can I not wipe themselves? Please. I would be so at peace. If you knew how to aim and wipe yourself, I would be good. I would be happy in life. That's all I'm asking for, Jesus. All right? But it's always just a little bit more, because even beyond, you're like, I just wish they would get a job. I just wish they would move out. Please. Go find a woman. Go find a man. Get out. Go to college. Get a job. All right? Please, right? We always just want just a little bit more. It's this temptation inside of us. And the man in the parable, he got caught up in the same trap. And you and I, we get caught up in the same trap. And God responded to the man in Luke 12, 20. He comes back to him and God says this. It says, but God said to him, you fool. You will die this very night. Then who will get everything you have worked for? Yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth, but not have a rich relationship with God. A person is a fool to store up earthly wealth and not have a rich relationship with God. God calls this man a fool because God knows the future and God sees all. And he's looking at this guy. He's working so hard to store up so much, but God actually knows he's going to die. He's going to die that night, not because of his sins. God just knows the future. God's not punishing him for what he's doing. It's just a fact that the man's going to die. And so the man is going to die, and God's looking at all of his stuff that he's not going to be able to take with him. All these things that he wants just a little bit more of. All these things that he puts so much investment in and says, if I just had this. If we just had a little bit more, if it was just a little upgraded, a little faster, a little bigger, if they just did a little bit more, oh, then life would be good. Then life would be awesome. And this man, he has made this his mission, his purpose in life, his focus at this time, to store up, store up, store up. And God's going, you are storing up things and you are worried about getting a little bit more of things that don't matter. Because you're a fool if you do those things. If you don't have a rich relationship with God. It sounds like to me that Jesus' advice in this parable is that what's most important in life, what matters, what we should focus on, is a rich relationship with God. Is that is the thing that's truly going to satisfy us, that's actually going to make us happy, that's going to leave us feeling not like we're lacking or needing anything else more, is a rich relationship with God. So, for the last time today, I swear I won't give you any more bad advice from here on out, okay? It'll be all good advice. But I want to give you some bad advice today on how to be dissatisfied, okay? So, here's the thing. Same thing I've said every week. If you wake up one day and you're feeling blessed by God, if you feel like God is taking care of you and you have a great family and great kids and a great marriage, a great job, and you're just thinking, you know what, I'm so tired of having this positive outlook. I'm going to go just totally negative with it, and I want to be completely dissatisfied with my life, and I want to just focus on all the bad instead of the good. Here is some bad advice on how to be dissatisfied with your life, okay? The first thing I want you to do is I want you to focus on being ungrateful, okay? Focus on being ungrateful. 1 Thessalonians 5 says this, gives us this little tidbit, always be joyful, never stop praying, be thankful in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you, who belong to Christ Jesus. So be joyful, be praying, be thankful. Okay, I don't want you to do any of those things, okay? Don't do that. Do not do those things. Instead, I want you to focus on being ungrateful. I'm going to give you the Michael Davis version of this, all right, and hope that lightning doesn't strike, okay? If it does, God really did not like this sermon series. So here's what I want you to do instead, okay? This is Michael 10:16. Why 10:16? Because that's my birthday. I don't know if you guys knew October started today. Anyway, gripe always. Gripe always, complain continually, be jealous in all circumstances because this will make you feel better, okay? This is the recipe on how to be dissatisfied, is you need to focus on being ungrateful. I don't want you to look at the good, positive things in your life. I want you to look at everything and go, not enough, okay? I want to look at your spouse and go, not enough. And we look at your kids and go, not good enough, right? Your house, your car, your job. And I want you to look at it all and go, you know what? This isn't good enough for me. I'm not thankful for this. This isn't a blessing from God. This isn't something he's given me to take care of my life and to give me a purpose. No. These things are not enough, right? Just think to yourself, it could be better. That's the attitude I want you to wake up with every day. It could be better. So when you look at your kids, when you look at your family, when you look at your job, when you look at the things you have, it could be better. As a matter of fact, I want you to turn to the person next to you right now and say, it could be better, right? Go ahead. It could be better. You guys are really following along. That's good, all right? It isn't enough. The second thing I want you to do is this. I want you to compare what you have to people who have more, all right? Compare what you have to other people. Ladies, in the comparison trap learning environment that ends tomorrow night, just that's a bunch of bahooey, okay? Don't listen to Andy Stanley and his wife. Don't listen to Pastor Carey. I don't know what they've been telling you. I am telling you, compare yourself to everybody, okay? You need to have a measuring stick, and the other people around you are the stick, okay? Paul said in 2 Corinthians, he said this to the church in Corinth. He said, We do not dare to classify or compare ourselves with some who commend themselves. When they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are not wise. Now, that's a bunch of bahooey, okay? It is wise to compare yourself to others, okay? And to compare what they have to what you have, all right? I want you to look at other people and go, oh, my spouse isn't like their spouse. My kids aren't like their kids. My house isn't as nice or as big as their house. My car is not as fast and as nice as their car. My boat is not as nice and as big and as comfy as their boat. Their phone isn't like my phone. Now, their job isn't anything like my job, and I don't like that, right? Kate and I, because, you know, I always believe that I have to practice what I preach, we went out and we practiced this week, okay? We went out and we were having a little date lunch, and we decided that we would go by JCPenney's, and so we dropped by JCPenney's over at Mid Rivers Mall Drive, and we went inside, and we went down the lower, and I found my dream fridge. My dream fridge refrigerator. I found this, I think it was like an LG or a Samsung, honey. You need to remember this, okay? And it was this fridge. The door on one side was basically like a tablet or an iPad. I've never seen these before. This has amazed me. It's like a computer in your fridge. You can write notes on it with like your finger or type it or leave video messages. There's a camera inside. You can leave a video message inside. And you can leave like audio messages. It has your calendar. You can check your email. You can make a to-do list or a shopping list. You can even mirror what's on like your TV over here on your fridge. So no matter which way you look, you don't miss anything, right? I mean, it was the most incredible refrigerator I have ever seen. And I was like, Kate, look at this thing. I was writing her love notes, you know, on there. And like, I was like, really? You could wake up to this every day. And I thought to myself, oh my goodness, there are people that I know who may have this refrigerator. And I began to hate you. Because when I got married and moved here, I bought the cheapest like $300 refrigerator I could find, right? I had a problem. When we had the anniversary party a couple weeks ago, we bought a cake from Sam's, and it had to be refrigerated. And guess what? I couldn't fit it in my refrigerator. But you knew who could? Marion. Marion could fit it in her fridge. And I started calling people in the church. Who has a fridge big enough for this cake? Most all of you did. But you know who didn't? Your pastor. That's who. I couldn't even fit a stinking cake from Sam's in this ridiculous thing. And so I was comparing myself and cursing all of you who could. And then my wife, we went across and we found the washers and dryers. We walked by the washers and dryers, and they had the front-loading washers and dryers. Now, again, my wife, she's a sinner. I apologize. She is jealous currently, all right? I'm sorry I'm confessing so much about you, dear. But she's jealous right now because my mother just bought a new washer and dryer because theirs blew up because of probably all my stinky laundry she cleaned for so many years. And so she got new washer and dryer, and they're front loading. And ours are like, again, like $200 Kenmore white, like you got to climb in it to get in there and stuff, you know what I mean? And so, but my mother and Kate stopped in front of it, and she goes, "This is what your mother has. Michael, I want one of these." Like, oh man, I must just curse your mother. You know what I mean? And we walked out of there just, again, totally dissatisfied with our life. You know, again, just practicing what I preach. I feel like I should do that as your pastor. But that's what I want you to do, okay? Go to JCPenney's and go find something shiny, all right? Go find the refrigerator. I think it was like $4,000, okay? It's practical for a fridge, right? And so go find the $4,000 refrigerator I was talking about. Go find, you know, the front loading and just think other people have this and you don't. And how much better their life is than yours. You know what I mean? Like, and you can do this in a lot of different ways. Watch the show House Hunters. Any of you guys watch House Hunters? Watch House Hunters and just think, that ain't my house. But it should be, you know what I mean? It should be, that should be my kitchen. That should be my bathroom. I'm not asking for much, I'm just asking for a little bit more, right? Just drive by like, you know, the BMW parking lot and just yell out the window, "Must be nice," you know what I mean? And just hate all of those people who can afford cars like that, you know what I mean? And just compare yourself to others, right? Like my stupid Ford, you know what I mean? I want to be able to afford European, right? And so just compare yourself to others as much as you possibly can to become dissatisfied. And then the third thing I want you to do is this. I want you to pursue temporary possessions over eternal possessions, okay? If we look at Luke 12:15, Jesus said this. He said, "Watch out and be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." Now, what Jesus was saying in this verse, I'll sum it up for you. What Jesus was saying is, be on the lookout for greed, because what it'll make you think is that the sum of your life is what you have or what you get in this life. And Jesus is saying what you have is not the sum of your life. That is not who you are, and it doesn't say anything really about you. I'm calling bull on that, okay? I'm telling you, yes, it is. I'm telling you, you ain't cool unless you got the newest, greatest, biggest, and fastest, all right? This matters greatly for your life. Look, if you don't have a cool car, you got to get a cool car, okay? Don't beat guys. Look at me, all right? You ain't manly unless you drive a truck, all right? I'm going to say that right now. We all know it's true. And then in that truck, number one, if it ain't diesel, you're just playing a joke on yourself, okay? And if it ain't got a lift in it and you can't take it out on a thing that ain't a street, it ain't really a truck and you're misusing that thing, okay? That's what being a man is about. Also, guys, I'm saying we ought to invoke No Shave November pretty soon, because if you don't got facial hair like Pastor Josh can grow, you're not a true man. So, Brandon, you're doing great. AC/DC all the way, that's what I'm talking about, okay? These are the things, all right, that determine your manliness, your cool factor. These are the things you need. You need the greatest, you need to upgrade, you need these things, because possessions, these are the things that add up, okay? And here's the bottom line, guys. You work hard, okay? You have a job. You deserve these things, okay? And don't even for a minute don't worry about tithing, okay? I know we just passed the offering plates and we talked about this is a continuation of worship. Okay? Here's the thing. Nobody in their right mind should give 10% of what's their income to anybody else, okay? I mean, if the church is going to ask you of that, then they need to be doing a little bit more for you, okay? Like, everybody in this room should get an Amazon gift card and a Tumblr cup right now, okay? Because that's just your money. You worked hard for that. You deserve it. You earn it. And that's your play money, okay? And what you need to do is you need to be storing up those earthly possessions, those things that you need. Man, those trips, those vacations, that boat, that car, that watch, that phone, that computer, those things that you really need in your life, those are the things you should be waiting for, adding up for, and storing for. Not giving to the kingdom or to the church or to any of that stuff, okay? Earthly possessions, not eternal possessions. Just get those out of your mind. Think short term, not long term, okay? Now, that was some really, really bad advice, okay? Really, really bad advice. But yet so many times it's advice that we follow, right? We actually do. We compare ourselves all day long. We do get into this comparison trap, like our women have been studying at their learning environment, where we compare ourselves to others. And where we look at what other people have, and we get jealous, and we get greedy, and we want to upgrade ourselves, and we want more things ourselves, and we need those things. And we do. We get ungrateful. We look at our jobs, and we look at our kids, and we look at our spouses, and we go, oh, it could be better. It could be better. You know, I mean, it's not like their kids, and it's not like their spouse, and I'm not asking for much, I'm just asking for a little bit more. And we do get entitled at times. We get entitled, and we think that our money is our money, and we forget that it's a blessing from God. And that it's really his money that he's giving us and that he's letting us keep 90% of, because he gave us the skill. He set things up. He's the one working in the background. But yet we feel entitled and we feel like we deserve and we feel like we want. And here's the thing. I heard some advice and I thought it was really, really good advice. And it's really going to kind of sum up this entire series, because this whole series is going to kind of tie together right here in this phrase right here. This is the thought, and I want you to think about this for a minute. How you live reveals what you believe. How you live reveals what you believe. In other words, don't tell me what you believe, show me. You may say you believe these things, but really the proof is in the pudding. The proof is in your actions and how you live. You know, think about it in terms of this entire series. The first week we talked about how to drift away from God, right? We talked about neglecting worship and neglecting time with God and finding other things to do, kind of finding replacements for God. How you live really reveals what you believe. Because if you really believe that God is good and that he's a loving father and that he's the source of joy and he's the epitome of who we should be, that we want to transform our lives into Jesus, well then show me that you believe that by how you live. Because if you truly believe that, if you believe that worship is powerful, is transforming, that we all need to hear the voice of God, and that none of us are perfect, and that we all need this, then you know what? Worship should be a priority. Being here every single Sunday should be a priority. But again, how you live reveals what you believe. And let's be honest, many times, yeah, sometimes life comes up, right? We get sick, we go out of town, you know, car breaks down, we can't make it. Those things are life, right? But let's be honest, some other times, what we really do is we choose alternatives. We choose, you know what? You know what's important today? Today what's important is going to the Cardinals game. You know what's important today? Today what's important is going camping. You know what's today? What's important is just, quite honestly, some of us sleeping in, right? What do we need today? Oh, we need to go to the zoo. That's what we need to do today. Have you worshiped this week? No. Can you give 4% of your day on Sunday? 4% of your day. I did the calculation, the math. What you're doing today, this is going to be 4% of your day. Can you give 4% of your day to God? No, I need to go somewhere else. Okay, show me what you believe by how you live, right? Because if really having a relationship with God and having a rich relationship with God is important, then worship wouldn't be neglected. Being in the Word of God wouldn't be neglected. Praying, being with other believers and learning the Word and applying it to our lives, it wouldn't be neglected. You don't want to drift away from God? Show it. Show what you believe and how you live. Or let's talk about the second week. We talked about how to become an addict. And we talked about how we take so many other things to help us with anxiety, to calm us down, to be able to have control and balance in life. And really what we're saying is when we take those things is that this is the thing that's going to keep me calm. This is the thing that's going to give me balance in life. This is what I think, the thing I need after I've had a hard day. What is it that you need after having a hard day? Do you believe that Christ is a source of mercy and grace and true joy and love and healing and redemption? Or do you think it's other things? Do you think it's what's in a bottle? Do you think it's, you know, what's in that cigarette? Do you think it's what's in that pill container? What is it that you think that you truly need in order to find balance and restoration in your life? If it's that, then that's what you believe. And that's what you're saying, is that God is not enough. This is what I need. Or let's talk about what we talked about last week, which was a doozy. We talked about how to commit adultery, and we talked about how many times we look at our spouse that God has blessed us with, and we say, you know what, she is just not good enough. The spouse you have given me, God, is not pretty enough. Doesn't talk the way I want. Doesn't do the things I want. And so you know what, I'm going to go find somebody else who does. And it's really just looking at God and going, God, the gift you gave me is not enough. Sorry. But if we really believe that God has a plan and a purpose for our life, and that our spouse is a gift from us, if we really truly believe that those vows and that commitment we made at that altar in front of God were important, then you know what? We wouldn't look at porn, or we wouldn't have to flirt with somebody else, or we wouldn't lust after anybody else. We would seal it, do whatever we had to do to not go down that path, take control of that temptation in our mind, pray it over, and be done with it. But that's not what we do. And what we really believe shows in our actions. And it's the same this week, talking about being dissatisfied. Christ is life. A rich relationship with God is the true source of joy and a fulfilled life. But many times we don't live that way. I remember this is kind of an old saying, and I don't exactly think it's 100% accurate, but you know, back in the old days, I remember my dad, when he's a pastor, he always used to say, if you want to see what you love most, if you want to see what you worship, look at your checkbook, you know, which is somewhat kind of accurate, but you know, because sometimes, honestly, bills are pretty high. But it is a somewhat accurate interpretation of look at what we really go to in order to be satisfied. What is it that we spend our time, our energy? You know, I believe today you could look at your calendar. Look at your calendar, because your calendar will tell you really what satisfies you most. Because you can look at what it's filled with and what you give priority to and what you say, we are not going to miss this. That thing is the thing that you run to in order to be satisfied in your life and that you want most. You know, Philippians, I think Paul gave a great thought in Philippians when he shared this with the church in Philippi. He said this in Philippians. He said, I once thought these things were valuable. He's talking about all kinds of different stuff and temptations and things. He said, I used to think these things were valuable, but now I consider them worthless because of what Christ has done. Yes, everything else is worthless when compared with the infinite value of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. For his sake, I have discarded everything else, counting it all as garbage so that I could gain Christ. What Paul is saying in this verse is that, yeah, you know, I used to think these things were valuable, but I figured out they were just garbage. They were worthless. They were stupid things that distracted me from Christ. What I really, truly need to be satisfied in life, what I truly need to be whole and to have joy is I need to get everything out of the way so I can gain Christ. Because it's what Christ has done when his son died on the cross for me, the freedom that he gave me, the relationship that was offered up to me. That is the thing where I find my joy, my value, my purpose in life. That is the thing that fills this hole that I have had in my life since I was born, that we're all born with because of the fall that Adam and Eve did in Genesis. That is the thing that brings me joy. But it's a temptation, isn't it? This last year, I was tempted for a millisecond, but I was tempted, all right? I figured something out when I was doing my taxes. So, you know, we got our giving statement, and I figured out I give, my amount of tithe that Kate and I give every single week is about the same, sometimes more, than a house payment, than our house payment. And I went, huh, look at that. I give a house payment to the church every month. And I'm going, now, that's a little odd. That's 12 house payments in a year. How much faster? I started to calculate, man, how much faster can I pay off my house if I didn't give tithes or offerings? And let's go back to bad advice for a minute, okay? Let's all think logically. Let's think about your job. Your pastor, you guys give me a paycheck, right? You guys pay me to, you know, be your shepherd and to be your pastor. And then I turn around, you give me a paycheck, and I turn around and I give you 10%. Of that paycheck. Now, do any of you go to your jobs and get paid and then willingly go back to your boss and go, you know what, I want to help the company. Here's 10%, right? I don't think any of you guys do that, right? But I do. And I go, and then my wife's job as well, and we give a house payment a month back to the church. Now, let's not even think of that. I was like, that's three car payments in a month. Three car payments. Both my cars are paid off right now, but three car payments in a month. Man, I could upgrade, right? I mean, that thing is running fine and has been a beauty, but I could upgrade. Maybe I should upgrade because, I mean, look how much money I'm giving to the church. I think I could go get one of those BMWs. Or do you know how many in 6 months I could have that refrigerator paid off that I want? You know what I mean? I could get Kate a couple of front-loading washers and dryers. You know what I mean? I could use that money to, you know, help my kids. I mean, that's a lot of money, you know, for the pastor to give. Look at how much things I could do with that. But here's the thing. Again, I was tempted for a microsecond. I thought it was interesting. And I didn't really debate on it for that long. Because here's the thing. My life is blessed, not because of what I have, not because of what I've earned, because of what God has given me. God has taken care of my life. God has given me things that I don't even understand and done things in my life that have blessed me beyond anything that I could ever do with that money that I give every month or that money that I earn or anything like that. I don't complain for a bit when I hand over that tithe check. Every single week, even when we're not here, we give that tithe check. And we do it out of joy. We do it gladly because God, that is God's money. And I know that God is going to do kingdom work, eternity work with that money. Way more and way more important things than I could ever do with it. And God is going to turn that around to save lives and save souls. And so I gladly hand it over. All those other things are garbage. All those other things are so unimportant and things that I don't need because I am investing in the kingdom. I'm investing. This life here is like this short compared to eternity, and I'm investing in the big picture, and I'm giving to what truly matters. And when that spirit tempts me and tells me that, no, you need those things. No, you need this. I go, you know what? Shut up. Because you're a liar and you're telling me wrong and none of this is true. I want a rich relationship with Christ, and my satisfaction in life is not going to come from this crap that doesn't last and that needs to be upgraded every couple years. My satisfaction is going to come from my Savior. My satisfaction is going to come through the relationships that I get through this place, through the people who are saved, through the people who are changed.